The Rush Hour. Gus Warland, Jude Bolton, and Wendell Saylor. This is the Triple M Rush Hour.
Welcome to the all-new Rush Hour podcast, boys. I'm Gus Warland.
I'm Jude Bolton.
And I'm Wendell Saylor.
Gee, it's good to be back, boys.
Oh, yes,
it is.
To get the crew back together. Look out.
Absolutely.
Yes.
But we do want to talk about the HSC results. Some of those have been leaked. So for some of our listeners who are waiting for their results, as well as parents of kids that have done the HSC, yesterday would have been a tough day for a few people because the leaking of the band 6 results, which are the top results, came through yesterday. So some people in groups of friends got them, other ones
didn't.
If you're
expecting you're in that band and not getting results, that's extra stressful.
Yeah,
terrible.
Exactly right. So, you know, just another, you know, it's been a really tough year for those year 11 and year 12.
Yeah.
Students had 2 years of COVID, haven't been in school very much, and now the leak results as well. So it's a tough one. So
but
we just want to let you guys...
It's not the be-all and end-all.
Well, that's what I want to ask you, Bokes. What did you guys get in your HSC? And, I mean, I'm looking at you, Dill, and you're just laughing at me. Like, did you actually go to any classes?
Mate, I was great at school, mate.
You were great at school?
Yeah. What was your focus in school?
Honestly... play sport, talk to girls, and socialise.
Exactly right. What did you get in your equivalent of the HSC up in Queensland?
T score, I think 680 or 690 or something. Yeah.
What's that average out of it?
I don't know. It wasn't the best. I spent a lot of time outside the office, like for being in trouble or just talking too much. So. Yeah, so...
But you got more than 50%.
Yeah, of course. Okay. That's why I'm here. What do you think?
No, you're here because you're a dual international, not because you're intelligent.
Is that why he's here?
What about you? What did you get, Jude?
I think I was around that 75 mark. Yeah. I was pretty average.
No, 75% is more than average.
I did well at English and sport and PE and stuff like that, but nothing great.
Well, let it out there for all the listeners who are waiting for their results or parents with kids that are waiting on results. It doesn't really matter at the end of the day. There's so many choices out there for you to make and stuff. So we will make sure that we hear from you tomorrow when the results do come out. But if you didn't get one of those band sixes, it just doesn't matter.
Exactly.
Gus Warland, Jude Bolton and Wendell Saylor. This is the Triple M Rush Hour. Our next guest is Australian tennis royalty. This guy's done it all on and off the court. And let me tell you, back in the 70s, things were pretty wild. A former world number one, his trophy cabinet has its own postcode with over 68 career titles, including a couple of Oz and US Opens. And he even won 3 Wimbledons on grass. It's amazing. When I'm on grass, all I do is eat twisties.
Tremendous win by John Newcombe to become the Open champion for 1973.
Off the bench and into the rush hour. With the best lip curtain we've ever seen this side of Motel, by the way. Welcome Australian tennis legend, John Newcombe.
Yes, Newcombe's joining us once again. How are you, Nick?
Yeah, good, thanks, Gus.
Mate, it's great to hear from you. And talking about moustaches, I had Merv Hughes through the summer. He's got a good one. Dennis Dilly had a good one. But Newcombe, yours is absolutely number one. How much are you enjoying the tennis, mate? And how are you going through this COVID time?
Well, just keeping my head down. I don't think I'll make it to Melbourne. Too much COVID and too much rubbish going on down there.
Yeah, when you talk about rubbish, talk us through your thoughts around Djokovic and the... No one came out a winner in that situation, did they?
No, not at all. It was kind of surprising that he tried to, get into the tournament and he didn't seem to have very good grounds to me, but he certainly created a really embarrassing situation for everyone.
John, it's Jude Bolton. I guess I'm interested to know what your thoughts on Craig Tiley and, you know, his position. Obviously, Tennis Australia, the Australia board have backed him, but the handling of the situation and I guess the lessons to be learned from this whole situation, what did you think of his role?
Well, I support Craig 100%. I think he's been left out to dry. Last year and this year, he's had to spend a good part of the year preparing for the tournament and, hiring planes and dealing with state governments and federal governments and, worst of all, the bureaucracies that go with that. So he's had a very unenviable job. And there was just that one mishap with Djokovic. I don't know how much. I can't imagine Craig would have said, yeah, jump on a plane and come on out. Mm. Djokovic seems to me has said, look, I've had COVID, I've got all the documents. Craig's not going to say, well, don't you dare come out here. It's the number one player in the world. He probably said, well, if you want to try it, go ahead.
Mate, I couldn't help but start watching some of the Aussies play. Nick Kyrgios last night, it's funny. Sometimes when you just think, oh, look, this guy, he's showing a lot of promise and he gets you back in, you know, and how do you think he's going to go in this tournament?
He got a pretty tough second round, hadn't he?
Yeah.
Medvedev, wow.
Even if he'd been playing a lot and was, you know, completely prepared, he's going to battle to beat Medvedev. So I can't see that happening.
Now, John, I'm interested. I know for some of our listeners who might not realise that you were a real father figure for our very own Angus Walland here as a kid. And I'm interested to know, you know, what advice did you have for him when he came up and wanted to maybe, you know, talk about girlfriends or things like that? Did you have any specific advice? How would you deal with him?
I don't want to go into too much detail here, but we did have a lot of talks. I did convince him when he was 12 years of age. I said, Angus, you're a bloody good athlete, mate, but you're fat, overweight, and you're not doing yourself justice. And within a year, he got himself trimmed down,
yep.
And he did better and better at his sport. And it's good to see how trim he is these days.
Swings and roundabouts, Nick. I do remember when I did ask you, because my dad, if people don't know, my father left the family home when I was quite young. So I went down to Nuke one day, lived down the bottom of our street, and I walked down. I was in fear a little bit, but not, I wasn't scared, but it was just that it's like talking to the headmaster going down. Nuke was a huge deal, right? I was nervous. And I walked down and I just said, look, I really love this girl and we've had a bit of a bust up and I'm not sure what to do. And Nuke just goes, you don't take a ham sandwich to a smorgasbord. You're 16 years of age. Get out there and get amongst it. And I never forgot that, Nuke. It was great advice.
Oh, wow. So good.
And did you follow it?
Well, I did for a while. Then I got back with her eventually. But you know what I mean. But, Nuke, just before we let you go, who do you think's going to win
the men's and the women's
at the Australian Open?
Men's has to be Medvedev or Zverev. On the women's side, Ash, if she's playing her best, she can win the tournament. You know, it'd be an interesting matchup for her against Osaka. I think she'll, you know, win that okay. I'd like the Italian girl, Paula Badosa. I think she's a real talent.
Look, good on you, Nuke. Thanks so much for supporting us. You always pick up the phone when we ring, mate, and enjoy the Aussie Open, even from the farm or from home. It's a shame that you can't get down there, but it's difficult times. But thanks so much for joining us, mate. We love you.
Thanks, guys. Hope you all have a great year.
The Rush Hour. Gus, Jude and Wendell. In 325 games and two premierships for the Sydney Swans, Jude Bolton learned how to do two things really well. Tackle people and get hit in the head really hard.
It's Bolton again.
Let's do one of those now. This is Jude Tackles.
Jude has a big tackle.
Yeah, an opportunity, Jude, for you to fire up about something. And obviously, the last couple of months, we haven't been on the air, so you've got something probably in your hot little hand you just want to fire up about.
Yeah, let's get fired up, boys. Now, lads, it came to light yesterday in the news that the New South Wales government's preferred strategy to getting kids back to school safely is 2 rapid antigen tests a week. Now, let's unpack this a bit. First of all, we all know that unlike other countries, we've all been asked to pay for them. Now, Del, we know you don't like paying for anything, but can you imagine the struggling families with 3 or 4 kids trying to fork out for 2 rats a week? There are 1.2 million school kids in this state, so in a 10-week period, that's 24 million tests. We're in a bloody global shortage, and we know everyone's hard-pressed to find one single rat. Of course, this then sees massive price gouging. From all reports, we haven't seen this type of gouging since Merv Hughes and Gussie hit the Ashes media box buffet between commentary commitments. Sort the supply chain out first, for God's sake. And speaking of God, maybe the government could have fined that Hillsong youth camp that looked very much like a musical festival, by the way, to fund some of the rapid antigen tests. Gee, that made my blood boil, considering our entire music industry is on its damn knees. Bad enough it was clearly against current health orders, not to mention the appalling tunes being played, sort of like Gus's camping trip with the boys. Anyway, I feel for the teachers, kids bracing themselves to re-enter the stuffy classrooms, because once again, the politicians haven't done proper risk analysis and planning in preparation to tackle this head on. By the way, we haven't touched upon the hassle and annoyance of sticking rapid antigen tests up your nose. Del hasn't been asked to stick this much up his nose since his rugby union days. Bolton out.
He's given him a clip on the way through. Well done, Jude.
Oh, mate, that was old school.
Up next, we're going to tell you which member of the Rush Hour is an absolute technology dinosaur. He had a shocker the other day.
I wonder who that is.
The Rush Hour. Gus Warland, Jude Bolton and Wendell Saylor. This is the Triple M Rush Hour.
Welcome back to the Rush Hour on Triple M. Jude Bolton, Gus Warland and Wendell Saylor. And we're getting this show together. We're planning this show. We've got a WhatsApp group. Everyone understands that. But there was one member of the crew that didn't actually make the call, which I put my hand up and say that was
yeah,
me.
You were non-existent.
I was in Hobart and I'd had a few beers after Australia'd won the Ashes, so I missed the meeting completely. But there was one member of our team that just struggled a little bit with technology, Jude. So I'll hand it over to you to explain.
Well, the tech dinosaur sitting next to me is Wendell Saylor, and let's just paint the picture. So, yeah, the team meeting, which you sadly missed. We jump on, and we've been through a pandemic, so there's been lots of video conferences for everyone. You think you know how to turn on your camera first and foremost? Like, no idea. He's going, I've got it here, I've got it. And sure enough, no.
So you could hear him, but you couldn't see him.
And he couldn't work this out. He was pressing different buttons. Then he's dialed in twice. You know when you've got someone in there twice? He's got Wendell.
He does like to make an entrance.
He's written his name wrong, so it's Wendell Sail a lot. It's like, where are you sailing, mate? It's like, yeah. It was just terrible. And then he actually finally got on. He was so rapt. Like, it was like, oh, finally can see. I can see now. And then he actually confessed to us that he's only got digital banking about 2 weeks ago.
What do you mean?
I'm old school, mate. I like people, and people like to see me. So I only sort of started doing online banking over the Christmas period and stuff. I started learning to do that.
So have you got like a bank book?
No, I've got a credit card and all that, but I like to go in and do my stuff around the bank.
Do you walk in and go to the bank teller and high fives? And
yeah, I'm a people person. I'm old school, and I don't like to move with the times, but I've had to move with the times just recently, obviously.
Are you serious? You didn't have internet banking until...
Like, yeah, just recently, yeah. Just till over the holiday period,
And
yeah.
Now that it's happened, are you like... Oh, this is awesome! And
yeah, it's okay. I still like to go back. I still like to go in the bank and just do it like old school. I like people to see me and me to see people.
It was his excuse for not transferring money across. I don't have internet banking.
Now tell us about your tech dinosaur. Give us a call on 1-333-53. G'day, Belinda. How are you?
Hi, very good, boys. How are you?
Very well. Good, lovely to hear from you, Belinda. Who is your tech dinosaur?
Oh, my wonderful mum, Beryl.
Tell us about your mum, Belinda.
She's my wonderful 80-year-old mum, and I'm driving around Coffs the other day, and I get a phone call, and it's mum going, "What's my password, Beryl?" So I tell her a password, and then she goes, "Okay, how do I transfer?"
And do you do this all the time?
Oh, look, I normally do it for her because I live there, you know, I'm a carer. And so far be it from me. I went out for a bit and actually sorted out when I was away.
Good on you, Belinda. Thank you so much for your call. What about Mick and Kempsey? Who's your tech dinosaur, Mick?
Yeah, me.
Oh, he's dobbed himself in.
Yeah, what happens? Dobbed myself in. Yeah, no, I haven't even got a computer. I've never been online in my life. Wendell's he's a tech giant compared to me.
Thank you, mate. Thank you.
Yeah, because you can at least go internet banking.
Yeah.
So how do you live without being on the internet?
Well, this is a problem. I'm finding it very difficult.
So no social media updates for Mick at the moment?
No, he's not. He hasn't got a Twitter account, and he's not on Facebook.
I would love that, Mick.
Well, you might as well live off the grid, mate. Like, that's what you're doing.
I'll probably do better off.
Mick is our very own Jason Bourne, I think.
Yeah. Sure is, Mick. Thank you for calling, mate. Just hang on the line there, brother. Coming up next, David from Sylvania. G'day, Dave.
Hey, how are you?
Now, is it you or someone you know who's the tech dinosaur?
My father-in-law.
Oh, your father-in-law.
Okay.
So you're going in dangerous areas here, Dave.
Yeah.
No, he's a wonderful gentleman. He knows, or he was, he died recently, but
God bless you.
Well, a couple of years ago...
Yep.
I gave him a $1,000 telephone because he used to get lost. But it was sitting on the counter and he thought it looked a bit dirty. And so he was doing the washing up and he decided to wash it up.
Washed up?
He didn't put it in the dishy, did he?
Yeah, straight in the dishwater. He let it soak for about 20 minutes before he gave it a scrub with the scrubbing brush.
Oh, my goodness.
I walked into the kitchen and it's covered in bubbles and it's sitting on the dish. I just looked at him and said, what are you doing? He says, oh, it was dirty. And I said, yeah, okay. I'll get you another one. But I'm not paying it.
This is the Triple M Rush Hour.
Well, let's talk about the New South Wales government considering a plan to let bar staff pull beers and serve drinks without needing to get an RSA, the Responsible Service of Alcohol, which is a one-day course that young people tend to do.
Yes.
Costs them about $150. They get this certificate, then they can go and work in bars and stuff. So because there's such a lack of people being able to work at the moment with COVID and so forth.
No international, backpackers coming through and pulling beers and stuff. You've got, like, actual bar managers having to serve beers the whole time and not even oversee it. It's pretty full on.
Okay, so have you folks ever come across, ever been in a position where you were pulling beers or...
Oh, look, I haven't got my RSA, but I can see where this is headed because I went down to I had to go to the Orient Hotel down in the Rocks.
And oh, great
it was
hotel.
Back, it was a bushfire appeal years ago. And
were you a bit of a big deal back in the day?
No, not at all. I was just a fresh-faced kid. But,
Of course so did you have your shirt on or off?
I had my shirt on. It wasn't that type of day, I don't think. But literally, I didn't realise how, you know, intense it is behind the bar. Like, especially on those days when it's busy. Like, there's six deep and everyone's going, oh, this and that. And people started realising I was under the pump and they were starting to order really difficult drinks. Like, there's kind of a fluffy duck. Can I have a cocktail here?
So what did you say? Look, none of that stuff.
That's a bourbon and coke. Yeah. But it was one for you, one for me. I think it was pretty loose stuff. It was out of control at one stage.
I ran a bar in England for about 5 years. It was actually the job that I loved the most before I got into media. I just really loved being with the customers. Back in the day, you could smoke in there as well. So I was a smoker. I was smoking as well as pulling beers. We ran food out as well. Lived above the
pub.
You
thought you were Brian Brown, didn't you?
Yeah.
How good.
I was no Brian Brown, believe me. It was either gin and tonics or a wine or a whiskey or a beer, you know. We had a stout in there as well. But I loved that particular job. But I had no training and stuff with that. But you've got to be a bit personable with it.
Yeah.
What about you? Would you have ever had to... Have you actually had a job?
Yeah, no, of course. Of course I've had a few jobs. But
what jobs have you had?
I worked at a sports shop for a while. I was doing a good job there. And then Ross Strudwick, remember Ross Strudwick, one of the legends of rugby league? After a while, he just said, look, because he wanted me to open up the shop a couple of times. And I was a bit late. This was the shop guy, I was late. So luckily I played first grade because he said I was going to sack you. But, mate, when we were at the Broncos up there at around Caxton Street and City Rollers and stuff like that, used to walk in and they'd be packed and they'd go, mate, Del, come pour a few drinks and that. And you'd hand them out and then you'd start pouring drinks and then... After a while, you'd have a few drinks, and then, oh, mate, it'd be so good. But the best
you thought
was,
you were the king.
Oh, yeah. You would have had your shirt off.
Yes, later on I did.
Yeah.
Over in London and stuff, you know, the Outback
Hotel in London. Yeah,
after Wallaby games and stuff like that, they said, come behind here and, mate. And then
a few snake bites.
And then you'd stay in there for staff drinks and, oh, mate, if I'm drinking, everyone's drinking.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love that. So I suppose at the end of the day, you've got a needs must sort of stuff and, you know, they'll lose a bit of money from the 150. What do you learn in a day's course, though?
You don't learn much.
You know what I mean?
The Rush Hour.
Just wanted to take you through my sort of favoured three bits, if you like.
You were a kid
Ashes.
In the candy store. You were a kid in the candy store in the commentary box up there, sitting next to Merv and everyone, all rolling around. You and Hads and everyone, were you?
I absolutely loved it. You know, and even meeting people like Sari and Botham. You know, David Gower, who a lot of our listeners would understand and know from England, and we're just a really great bunch of blokes. Mark Tubby Taylor, who, you know, he's Australian of the Year. He was Australian captain for over 50 Test matches. Just to hang with them, have a few beers, play tennis on our days off, and travel together and stuff, and just pick their brains about the game of cricket. Which, of course, you know, I'm an absolute tragic. So I thought I'd take you through my top three moments of the summer. Firstly, it all started with the first ball of the series with Mitchell Starc.
Rory Burns to face. Listen to the noise. Oh! Stumps! Knocked him over, first ball! Hockentrot Burns! What a stump that is! The castle's over!
Yeah, and that was
That's
incredible.
Terrific from JB. But to knock him over first nut.
Yeah,
but
round his legs as well.
And just set the tone for the whole Ashes series.
And that's what you dream about. You know, it's like when you're playing rugby league, you're playing AFL, there's things that you grow up as a kid, you think you want to just the Ashes, to bowl that ball and to set that standard. That was unbelievable.
Well, Starkey had also, he'd copped it from a lot.
Yes.
Blokes like Warnie and those sort of guys have ripped him the whole time. For him to rip through was fantastic.
He did it from the first ball and he did it all series as well. So that was a magic moment. Yeah. But also another moment, a New South Welshman, a Sydney sider. Now he actually born in Adelaide, but the GOAT getting his 400th wicket.
It might be squeezed. I reckon it is. And the GOAT's got his 400th.
He's got it.
We waited and we waited and we waited. Get 400, then he got 401, then he got 402. It happened really quickly for him. And if you ever find Nathan Lyon in a bar and he's by himself, walk up to him and have a beer with him, because he is literally one of the best blokes you'll ever come across.
He looks like he's led the charge since they've won as well.
Oh, yeah.
He has led the celebrations, and now he's out for the Sixers.
He's playing the Sixers at the moment.
Well, he's playing for the Sixers at the moment with a big bash. If you breathalyze him, I bet you it'd still be over. And a third moment for me is Boland. Got picked in the team for the Melbourne Test match. Then, of course, he did some magic stuff in Sydney as well. Here's a little bit of magic from Scotty.
Here he comes, Boland. Boland next, and he's gone! Robinson on your mic, and Boland has 6 for 5 of 20 deliveries.
Yeah, incredible. I sat there with Merv Hughes and Brad Haddon for 23 minutes, saw 5 wickets, and called the Ashes winning wicket. It was just the most amazing summer for me. So I wanted to share that with you, but also ask you boys, in the end, the Pommies basically gave up. Their last 5 wickets were pathetic. I could go on about them all day.
They walked over it. It was just a complete rollover, wasn't it?
Complete rollover from a national cricket team was just a disgrace. I wanted to ask you boys, have you ever had a season where you go, you know what, halfway through or three quarters of the way through, you can't make the semis or injuries or whatever, and you know what, I just want to get out of this season. I just want to get on my holiday and then get back in the pre-season.
Yeah, look, I think a couple of years there at the Queensland Reds, I mean, at the Bronx were always thereabouts. Even I think we won one game from the first 9 and we still got to the finals, got knocked out in the first round. But in the Reds, we were like playing off. It was like, you know, when they promote, it's the wooden spoon clash, and we're playing a South African side like the Bulls or the Cats, and you just want to get to Mad Monday, but you don't want to lose that game, because I'd never come last in sort of anything, and I just didn't want to come last as a team. So we said, boys, we've got to win this so we can have a cracking Mad Monday. And just quietly, I organised Mad Monday as well. So, yeah.
Did you win?
Yeah, of course we won, yeah. So, yeah, we beat the Cats and then the Bulls.
That last game, when you know you're on Mad Monday, if you're not in the game, there is always that element of we're tapping out here. And it is tough, but I had one, I remember at the Stadium Australia, it was when Roosie took over from Rocket, and we were just a bit of a rabble. And the last minute of the game, I'm so excited about, okay, we're going to go and have a beer. And I got hit right on the top lip. So I had this big, fat, black lip that was just leaking into each beer. And it looked terrible. It looked, like I had, like, Botox gone wrong. And the boys just ripped me the whole time. It was devastating.
Not good timing.
Coming up, let's talk Nick Kyrgios. He once was considered the biggest wanker in sport, but are people starting to warm to him?
Gus Warland, Jude Bolton, and Wendell Saylor. This is the Triple M Rush Hour.
Welcome to the Rush Hour. Gus Warland, Jude Bolton, Wendell Saylor on Triple M. This is the Rush Hour, and we're talking about bad sporting parents.
It can bring the worst out in people, can't it?
Sport. Oh, absolutely.
And they try and live vicariously through their kids.
Oh, absolutely. And there's a lot of parents out there that just love their kids, and they feel like they're getting a bad run or haven't got the right, you know, support, as other kids might be slightly over them. So it riles you up, right, because you want the best for your kids.
But the best advice you can give, I think, your kids, is just to go there and have fun, because there's plenty of time to be, you know. That's one thing I do when I coach, and that, like, parents go, oh, my, what's the best advice? I said, just let them be kids, you know, at the moment.
Enjoy it.
They'll get there,
Let them have fun.
Yeah.
Yep. Novak Djokovic's dad, he's lashed out at Australian government over the treatment of his tennis star son, likening it to an assassination attempt. Come on, mate. It's not an assassination attempt. Mr. Djokovic took to social media with the post and said this. The attempt to assassinate the best athlete in the world has ended. That's not true, mate. 50 bullets in Novak's chest. See you in Paris.
That's what he said.
Well, that's what he said. Firstly, it's not 50 bullets. No one shot him once. And secondly, you won't see him in Paris because they've barred your son as well.
Yeah.
Mr. Djokovic later distanced himself from the post, saying the words were not his, but that of the Suns fans. But it's out there already. You posted it. You're a flog. Your son's a flog. It's a flogathon. It's as simple as that. So what possible chances Novak got of being a decent bloke when he's got a dad like this?
Well, it sets a tone early, doesn't it? When you've got someone like that and that sort of influential character as you're growing up,
telling you how awesome you are and the world's against you. That's the reason why Novak will never be loved like Nadal, who'll never be loved like Federer, because he's a flog and his dad's a flog. So let's talk about more flog parents. You've got one for us, Jude.
Well, he's just a star of the NBA, and we've seen him just dominate for Charlotte Hornets, LaMelo Ball, but his father, LaVar Ball, has said this when he was young.
You're selfish,
you get tapped in the head. I told your ass, we cannot respond like that. You of all people. But you let me down. You my brand. You my game. We don't win because your ass. Let's go. What you want to do? Son, I told your ass. I said, you're getting on my bad last nerve because you're doing the wrong over and over and over.
So that's his dad talking to his son. Was his dad a decent player himself? Was he as good as his son?
He is a A-grade flog.
He wasn't great.
But him talking about you're ruining my brand. And all that stuff. He's just a young kid.
Your has-been latest, mate. It's up to the kids to enjoy themselves and do what they do, you know?
Ended up being pick number three in the draft, and he's a star, absolute star.
So he's going good.
He's just ridden him so hard as a youngster.
So another flog parent. Okay, what about Mr. Williams? He had Serena and Venus, right? And obviously they're quality players. Venus was a gun. Serena, probably the best there ever will be. Probably won't win another one, but no, still, just so, an absolute gun. This is Mr. Williams interrupting an interview when one of the girls was quite young.
Did you think you could beat her?
I know I can beat her.
Very confident?
I'm very confident.
You say it so easily. Why?
Because I believe
it. Cut right here, if you don't mind. And let me tell you what. What she has said, she said it with so much confidence the first time. But if you keep going on and on.
Listen, we can't keep interrupting. I mean, if you want...
You got to understand that you're dealing with an image of a 14-year-old child. And this child gonna be out there playing when your old ass and me gonna be in the grave. When she says something, we done told you what's happening. And let her be a kid. She done answered it with a lot of confidence. Leave that alone.
What do you reckon? Is he being a flog or is he being sort of protective in that situation?
I think he's being protective as well, because I think where they grew up, you know, there was a lot of, you know, gangbangers and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, the way that they grew up, those girls and, mate, the wonderful athletes, you know, I've loved watching them play, but it was being so protective, overprotective sometimes. If they're getting interviewed, let them get interviewed. It's not your interview.
Yeah, I can sort of understand where he's coming from, though. Give us a call, 133353, your worst sporting parents. Let's go to Colin now in Liverpool. Give us your sport ugly parent story, brother.
So years ago, I was coaching an under-12 side for the club I was playing for at the time. Mm-hmm. And there was this kid, absolute superstar, the sort of kid that runs circles around everyone.
Yeah.
So I tried to... put him in the halves, like thinking might develop his skills a bit more. At that age, it's the old, you know, first receiver has to pass the ball. Got to the grand final, lost in the second half, and when we come off, his dad came up to me, got in my face, nearly got into a punch-up over it, and told me that I lost us the grand final because I didn't let his kid run around.
He's trying to hold you to account and just up in your face, Colin.
Yeah, I thought I was doing the best for the kid to try and develop him rather than just constantly run circles and not learn anything.
I tell you what, struggle sometimes to get people to coach, don't you, because you've got the parents in your face.
But it's also hard for young referees and umpires as well when you've got these parents who are just overbearing and yelling at them and just making it an uncomfortable environment. It shouldn't happen.
The Rush Hour. Gus, Jude and Wendell.
We're talking about Nick Kyrgios, and if you missed it last night, he had a good win, straight set win. He's a quality player. We know that. There's never been a problem with his actual tennis ability. It's more around his attitude and the way that he treats people and that type of stuff. So I want to play some audio to you guys now. This was him getting the job done, the final point last night.
Oh, and Kyrgios cruises into round two. And that was one of the better performances we've seen in an opening round by him here at the Australian Open.
Yeah, he got it done against an Englishman who's ranked about 120 in the world and expected to win.
It was a good, perfect warm-up for him because he has been struck down by COVID beforehand, so he was only serving in isolation. So, yeah, it was a good performance.
Exactly right. He talks about exactly those 2 points, Jude, in the post-match press conference.
The last, you know, week has been tough, but I did isolation and, you know, I was lucky enough to just, you know, have a tennis court, just hit some serves. Obviously, I served well today. So, I don't know what I've done to this crowd because you guys are a zoo now. Like, you guys are out of control. But I'm just super happy to be here again. Obviously, I know that, you know, we've all had a tough couple of years, so just to be back here at Oz Open again. And I'm just happy to be in front of you guys, honestly. It's so much fun.
So there's a lot of stuff to love in that, but he is on national TV live, talking to a lot of people, kids in the audience, and he uses the F word, right? So that's where he lets himself down a little bit. And then we...
Hang on. But like,
what do you mean, hang on?
The young crowd loves him. Like, it's cutting edge, mate. It's bringing new fans to the game.
Is it?
Well, tennis is a bit straight down the line, surely.
I know it seems disrespectful, like swearing, but, mate...
Well, it's not the UFC, mate, and the boxing, which is where you expect it. I know,
but footballers have done it, and, mate, we've seen netballers and that do it sometimes here and there.
Really?
Yeah, well,
okay, I'd love you to get that bit of audio for me if that happened. Let's speak to Liam Brady now. Here's the pommy that, that
Curious
Nick,
beat.
Nick yeah. beat, talking about the disrespect from Curious.
I mean, it's difficult, you know. I mean, I know what Nick's like, and you know, I saw a few of the guys in the lockers before, and they said, "Are you ready for the disrespect out there?" I don't think it's personal. If I felt like it was personal and it was malicious, then I'd probably feel like he'd crossed the line. But our job is to entertain the people and for them to enjoy the tennis that they come to watch, and you know, he does that, and full respect to him. That's what tennis is about, I think.
You know, and that's fair enough. What I mean, has he turned the corner? He's someone that we've spoken about a lot on the Dead Set Legends the last couple of years on a Saturday morning, our other show. What are your thoughts on Nick Kyrgios moving forward, you two blokes?
I think he's matured a lot. I think he's gone through, you know, a lot of change in his life and things like that, and I feel like he's getting more mature. But I'd still want to see him not be that unrealised talent. I want to see him take it to a completely another level, and at the moment he hasn't achieved that yet, so... I think he's improved in my eyes.
Oh, look, I still think he's just inconsistent. He's a showman. I know he's been through a fair bit over the last couple of years, but, like, mate, fulfill your talent, as Jude said. I know he goes through stuff, and that we all do. I know some people who just love him and some people who just hate him. So I'm sort of, at the moment...
Where are you?
The older generation.
This will shock you. I'm on the fence at the moment.
Really? Well, there's a massive shock.
The older generation.
Come on, mate, make a decision for once in your life. Up next, we're thrilled to have this guy on the line, straight from the Ashes victory, it's Steve Smith.
Gus Warland, Jude Bolton and Wendell Saylor. This is the Triple M Rush Hour. Our next guest will one day have a gold statue in the middle of George Street that people will kiss on the feet. His cricket achievements are as long as your arm. If your arm's as long as your leg. They include ICC Player of the Year, Team of the Decade, Alan Border Medalist. And he should have one for taking that wicket late on day 5 of the SCG test.
Oh, he's got it! Yes, he can get it out!
Please welcome to the Triple M Rush Hour, Steve Smith.
Yeah, we've got him on the line. Smithy, how are you? Welcome to the show.
I'm good, Gus. Thanks for having me.
Mate, absolute pleasure. As you can probably hear in my voice when I called that wicket, how exciting was that? Did you think you might get the next wicket as well?
Oh, I mean, if you're going to bowl to someone at the end, probably Jimmy Anderson, someone that you want to be bowling to. So, yeah, look, it was a nice little contest. Unfortunately, the last ball I bowled was an absolute pie. But outside of those, I thought I landed them quite well. Just one needed to hit that rough and do a bit different. Unfortunately, it didn't.
Oh, it was fantastic, mate. It's been a great Ashes series. And I suppose in the end, the capitulation by England, you know, we're trying to get over that because it looked like they were just wanted to pack up and go home. But can you look back on it now, mate, even a few days on, about how proud you are of the 4-0, the fact that we're one wicket away from 5-0, but also you captained again Australia in that second test match in Adelaide. It was just a wonderful couple of months for you.
Yeah, no, it's been good fun. You know, I think the guys have played exceptionally well all summer. We never really let England get into the game once. We were pretty relentless and put the foot on the throat, so to speak. So really pleased to be involved with it. And yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Well, Smithy, you did talk about bowling there, mate. We talk about all-rounders and Cam Green, we know for the last couple of years he's had massive potential, but on the big stage, I think he finally delivered. And mate, what an absolute weapon.
Yeah, look, he's got a bright future, doesn't he? You know, he bowls over 140 clicks and he's a batsman. So it's exciting to see. I think he'll gain a bit of confidence out of the way. I think he played in the first innings in Hobart and that second innings in Sydney. You know, he didn't get the three figures, which I know I was disappointed about, but I'm sure that's not too far away.
Now, Smithy, we understand that from all reports, you're inseparable with Marnus Labuschagne, and just that, you know, you turn around, you're always next to each other, just chewing the fat at different stages. But I want to know whether you review after test your best leave and most eccentric leaves at different stages.
Oh, not really. It's always talked quite a bit about, you know, amongst commentary and all those kind of people in England. When we had a beer after the test match, they were like, what are you guys like thinking? What's going on in your mind when this happens? Like, we're both kind of, when we're doing those eccentric kind of things, I think we're just in the zone and really focused and not really knowing that we're doing it. So, yeah, it's nice to get into those places.
Smithy, what do you do outside cricket, mate, to relax? Do you like fishing or, you know, do you like playing golf? Or what do you like doing in your spare time?
I like tennis more than golf. Yep. So I have a hit every now and again. We've got a bit of a break now. I think obviously just been announced. I think that New Zealand, unfortunately, won't be coming. So I may have a little bit of time off and potentially get myself out on the court and hit a few balls and just cruise around at home. It's nice to spend a little bit of time at home. So, yeah, I'm pretty chilled.
Well, Smithy, I was quite surprised. When the bender got shut down there, mate, you weren't there. I was quite surprised about that. Nathan Lyon was there. And
Who was there? Nathan Lyon, Travis Head, Jimmy Anderson.
How good?
Joe Root.
Yeah, I was asleep by then, boys.
Yeah, you were Barnes, so I've got no doubt.
How was the celebration, Smithy?
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, it's always nice to, I guess, wrap up the series when you played really well as a team and got the results we were after. So, yeah, boys had a few beers and enjoyed each other's company. And, yeah, it was good fun.
In speaking of the celebrations, obviously that was that moment where all the beers were coming out and the champagne was about to flow, but it was put away so Usman Khawaja could come back to the centre of the photo. That must have been a very beautiful and special moment. And it really looks a showing and a telling of the current culture, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. You know, you got to respect different cultures, and Usman's obviously doesn't like alcohol or can't have alcohol poured over himself. So, I thought it was great the way we were able to include him and get him involved in the celebration.
Yeah, he's a champion. Thanks so much for joining us on our first show, Smithy. We really appreciate it, mate, and have the best of luck in the next couple of weeks before you head off to Pakistan now that New Zealand series is postponed. But look forward to catching up soon with you, mate.
Cheers, guys.
Well, that's it for today's podcast. We'll be back tomorrow for more of the show. You can catch us live on the radio from 4 p.m. on Triple M.